All right, Jason. So when you open a loaf of bread, what do you do with the end piece? Do you keep it in
Like
the
right
bag all
away.
the, yeah, like do you keep it in the bag to the end like an idiot, or do you throw it away, or do you?
Well, you know the answer just by the way you started that. Without it, so it's funny. It's actually interesting timing because I think I saw this on the old Twitter machine, and from you, and I believe it was like 3 days ago. I threw away, like, there was still a few pieces of bread left in said loaf. Because if you keep it in your fridge, bread lasts much longer, much longer. Not talked about how much longer bread will last. You keep that crap in
I
the
think
fridge
wheat bread
anyway.
lasts a little longer too than white bread.
Oh, interesting. Fun fact. So, anyways, is it the yeast? I keep the heels of the bread till the very last moment. And here's why, Bill. Because I don't need like a ton of bread, but like when I do, it's like, all right, let's get down with some sandwiches. But
Let's
I've
get this
always
bread.
noticed you gotta get that bread. And what I've always noticed is my wife will like somehow always want some form of sandwich in bread form, not the wraps, not any other things that we have in the house readily available, but it's always in the moment when there's just the freaking ass ends left. So I keep them all the time just so I have that backup. But will she eat those? No. Does anybody actually eat the heels?
Well, Keith said he keeps it to the end just in case you run out, but I always
Yeah.
have at least two loaves of bread going. Like I get one
Oh,
every
gee.
time I go to the, I mean, I'm a single human, so I could
But
see how it
wouldn't you
would
like
run
the
out
beginning of
faster.
you, Belle and Beauty and the Beast going to the like you know your
Yeah.
local market just grabbing loaves of bread, whistling through town?
Bonjour.
So wait, but what do you do? Do you eat those bread heels or you throw them right away?
I had like a high thought the other night when I was grabbing a piece of bread to eat. Hi. And I was like, pulled out the first piece, and I was like, "What the fuck am I keeping this for?" And I threw it away.
Done. Just
Yeah,
tossed it.
because I'm always just like reaching over it every single time.
You know what it is, Bill? It's like a bookend, you know, like when you were younger, like in a
That serves a
bookshelf. If you're,
purpose, though.
but this for me, in some odd way, is like my book. It's like my bookend. So like I keep the. It almost feels like it keeps the bread whole. Because then I feel like if you throw away the heel, the next closest piece will turn into a heel.
Well, if you talk to the average teenager of today and you ask them what it is about
Pop culture.
that they like, and they'll the first thing they'll say is the beat.
Get yourself addicted.
Welcome into the Pop Culture Pile Driver. Get addicted to the content. I am Jason Rossi. I could be followed along all social media platforms at Jason D. Rossi on our Twitter machine, our little account that we have together, our little kumbaya place. It's a safe place where you can share all your thoughts and just bash people over the head with mean things, like my buddy. It is at Pop Culture PD, and if you give it a follow, instantly make your day better. Never used that one. And with me, as always, my tag team partner in the podcast sphere. He can be followed along at Billy Yee on Twitter because Billy Yee 2411 was booted off because he is a bad boy. I'm telling you, he is a naughty, naughty man. It's starting to spread throughout the DSG, but it is true. And it's something there will be a full-on therapy session soon, but he has become quite the troll over on Twitter.
I
So
don't
for this
get on with
one
the red
month
thread.
only, For the April showers, you can get Billy's OnlyFans, where he has now opened up. It's the camera. It's a below deck camera only, so you can see whatever you want downstairs. Only during the Pineapple Boys, you can do it if you use the special code Bully D, which I think is an amazing new nickname for you, Bill. He is Billy D. What's going on, man?
Yeah, I do like Bully D. It's basically
Good
just like
one.
three or four people on Twitter. Maybe I should see if I can get a better thing than Billy Yee. Maybe Bully D. I'm sure that's taken. I'd probably have to go. I could probably get Bully D 2411 though.
Bully, I bet you could, but either way, you don't have to change it. But I thought that actually it popped me, if you would, Bill. It popped me when I think it was Goo who said it. It made me laugh. Is Billy,
well, if you
damn keyboard, there is no bounds, Bill. There is no bounds. It's not just related to like me, it's not just related to other things. You crank those opinions, but you know what? That's what. Unfortunate, the slum, you've become the slime of Twitter. That's not you specifically, we all are, but that's what it's about, right?
If you put a stinky opinion out there, I'm gonna comment on it. So,
But what if your opinion on someone's opinion is equally stinky? Which
yeah,
most of the time,
but yeah, I mean, that's eye for an eye.
That's it. I like it. I like it. So give him a follow, though. Make sure you are following at Billy Yee 2411 on the Twitter. You can see what we're all talking about here, what all the hype is about. And make sure you subscribe to our podcast here. It's Pop Culture Pile Driver, Tree Words on iTunes. Please leave us a 5-star review. It would make our entire day, month, or even our year. Find us on Spotify, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, and like, subscribe over on YouTube. Facebook, we are a part of the Dork Sheared Gooniverse. We can see our broadcast, Mac and Goo, Change My Mind, and some streaming stuff from the Dork Boys. Merch Bill is over at T Public. You can check out our stuff, all the Dork Sheared Gooniverse pod merch, as well as that's a chunky if you are a fan and of I Think You Should Leave. And if you're not, probably not listening. And music is from our guys. Oh Yeah. Now, you went to a show recently. Was that an Oh Yeah concert?
That was a co-pilot show. Co-pilot. I think they're still sourcing people. Yeah. Yeah. He's one of the guitarists and writers and singers and all that jazz. But they're like a Mumford and Son, I'd say, ish type band. They played like a secret show on Boylston Street in the basement of the church. Yeah, like it's kind of cool. Like you buy tickets and then they don't tell you where it is until like a few hours before the show. They tell you the general area.
Oh, okay. Yeah. It's half cool, half nerve wracking. Like, what if you don't want to, what if you can't get there in time?
Yeah, they said like Back Bay, like Boylston Street. So that's cool. Pretty good idea.
It's always good to get out, be in front of those live crowds. The podcast nonprofit's partner is Nonprofit partner. Oh, that was much harder than it needed to be. As Frank says, hi, you can check out all that is the doings over there and how you can get involved and how you can help raise funds for people that are going through cancer treatment and doing experiential events over at franksayshi.com. Bill, we both have been doing a lot of different things recently. We're both at the AEW show here in Boston. You went to a show. I went to a concert the other night. It's weird. It's like, for me specifically, like I've been pretty homebody. I still work from home on the 9 to 5, but went to a show on Tuesday night, the House of Blues, then went to AEW with you, like together in Kin at the Aganis Arena, which was, both nights were just packed with just passionate people. It feels good, Bill. It feels good to when you get out and you get around that type of atmosphere.
Yeah, we say it all the time. Wrestling is a pretty strong community. You're among family when you're there. No one's really fighting or anything like that. So, fun time. And it got me tickled my wrestling bone a little bit. The Young Bucks versus TLDR or whatever the hell they were called.
FTR.
That was one of the better tag team matches I've ever seen. Probably up there with the Usos and the Wyatt family at Money in the Bank.
So, it's already just to give people background, like if you care, you don't care, it's totally cool. But like this was a tag match that was just off the charts. This whole show for like this pretty is what I realized with AEW, like it's about 45 minutes and it flies by. But then you're like, well, we still have another hour and there's a main event. And then there's a little bit of like that, not lull, because they still have really good stuff. Like there was a Hardy Boys tables match in this, but like it kind of does this weird like overall kind of hype dip and then it like spikes back up usually at the end. That's like the AEW bus. And yes, and I will tell you right now that that main event was amazing. Seeing Samoa Joe back in the really out of nowhere, he just re-debuted for what is now Ring of Honor, which is owned by AEW, and then he's in the second match. You had Christian, who I usually could care meh about, but versus Adam Cole in a banger to start. It was just tons of fun. The audience was alive the whole time.
Follow up WrestleMania, you know?
Well, that's the thing. So that's where I was going to go. Like this show and even last week's show and all the things that have happened around WrestleMania that was just, I thought, also an excellent WrestleMania. The best of the marathon WrestleManias so far.
Oh, easily. It's up there with 30 in the teens.
Yeah, it is. I think like the overall product still is going to be hard. You're not going to sit down and plop for 8 hours, or 7.5. But so awesome, just so entertaining. Even the stuff that like is new was good. Everything was very strong. But you said, to follow that up to come out with a banger like this for AEW, smart, felt like a pay per view esque card. So
and still like their roster's nuts because I didn't see CM Punk. I know Kenny Omega is hurt. So still some of their big guys weren't even there, and it felt like a really good show.
Yeah, we were talking with it. No Punk, no Darby Allin, who's like a four pillars guy for that company.
Sammy Guevara didn't wrestle, but he was out a few times.
And you never, you know, Britt Baker, who's like one of the hottest female acts. So yeah, very good stuff. And I got to see my dudes, John Moxley and Bryan Danielson tear it up, especially Moxley.
No, Moxley looked good. I'll say Daniel Bryan's match almost put me to sleep.
Yeah, because here's the problem with that match. And I'm with all due respect, Trent Barretta, like these are people.
Tell me what you thought, because I have a theory on why it stunk.
I think Daniel Bryan's the great. Every match he has is usually excellent. This one, they just tried too hard to be a great match when all they needed to do was put on about a 6 minute, have him go out there, beat the bag out of Barretta at one point and end it. It was too competitive. And with all due respect,
like he was trying to let him call the match or something because it looked clunky.
What's funny? It's a really good point. And I think it's probably the best observation from like looking back now that they were trying to do too much. And I bet you're right. I bet you Barretta may have called that match because, and then Daniel Bryan probably had the end, because the thing with Daniel Bryan or Bryan Danielson in AEW, usually bangers, even with like mid-card guys, like there is a lull to it because he's a wrestler. He's not trying to do high spot. The point with AEW, it's all about like these woos and wow, big moments, and can get a little bit ridiculous. But Danielson usually grounds that whole thing. But this was it was a tough one.
That's why TLDR's match there was so good, because you knew right off the bat, like when I saw the matchup, I was sitting next to Mac from the Mac and Goop podcast. And I was like, I don't know if this is going to be super high flying, but from what I remember of these guys in NXT, when they got paired up with a team like this, it's almost even better because they kind of ground it in a regular, you know, as you know, Nestle and JC do over the Jobber Knocker, like the shine, the heat, like it was a textbook match, but they kind of put different flares and spins on each part of it. And like, the ending where he like spits in his face, uses his own finisher mania for like the last like 3 minutes. It was a beautiful thing.
It really was. And the thing with FTR, and you know, I'm the biggest Bret Hart fan, is like they have designed their wrestling style after the Hart Foundation and Bret Hart. And there was a tweet by Dax, the bald member of the group, who said he had a phone call with Bret Hart. This was yesterday. So the day after, he said, I had a phone call with Bret Hart. Yes, I cried. I'm 39 years old and I goddamn love wrestling. And it makes me want to cry because I'm not 39 yet, but I love wrestling.
Even one of the Young Bucks did the patented second rope double elbow and got up and gave the Bret Hart thing. I was dying.
It was awesome.
It was so good.
And good for those guys. They love what they do, and that comes across as well. So, Bill, today we go from some highs of getting out, being around the passionate people, to the unfortunate we talked about recently, the passing of Taylor Hawkins, which drives us to our topic today, the top 11 Foo Fighters song. This may be one of the more difficult lists to create because, just to go spoiler-ish, there's not going to be a song in here you don't know. When it comes to the Foo Fighters, they're catalog is so large, but a lot of their catalog, like the top or like 25% of their catalog, is radio hits. Like legitimate,
it's kind of crazy.
It is like radio hits, not radio recognition, like songs that were like at
not Blink 182. Like to Davey's point about that we give him shit on, but he's right. Blink 182 had one top.
No, he's not. Hit. He's 100% right. No, but there's alternative
factually,
charts. Like, yeah, but top 40 is not everything. There's alternative charts.
What I'm saying here is
don't yell
the
at me,
fact
though.
That he had one top 40 hit where they had a bunch of like,
oh, people, yeah.
Like, that's what I mean.
Yeah, on our list, I think in top 40, I think there's only, I think it's it's five. Five of these were at least on the top 40.
Yeah.
They don't have a number one, I don't think, ever. But they have alternative chart-wise all of these songs, including to this day, I believe it's between them and a song by Muse that is the number one longevity alternative number one song. I can check before we get to it. But there's tons of honorable mentions we'll get to. We know this list will divide people. We know this will probably piss a lot of people off. But at the end of the day, to make any top anything Foo Fighters, if you're passionate about them, like to me, a top, I always have trouble lining, but probably top five when it all is said and done. Band for me.
Best of You was number one.
Was a
not top maybe, maybe alternative rock.
Yeah. No, they have a ton of number one alternatives, like a ton. Spoilers to one that makes it. I already know what's going to be. Don't listen. If you, I'll look up the one, because there's one between that and Muse. Uprising. One went 18 weeks, one went 17 weeks at number one. They were back to back. It was the wildest time and just hits all over the place. But let's get into it, Bill. Top 11 Foo Fighters song. We kick it all off with actually, and this is probably my hottest take of this podcast, my probably least favorite hit by the Foo Fighters, not on my list, made it pretty stronger on your list. It is Learn to Fly.
I can't believe you don't really like this song.
You know what it is? I bet you when I sit, because I think it's just the music video overwhelmed the song, and then it just overplayed throughout years. Like, it's the only song I would hear that and a few others you'll hear on this list. But I don't know, the sound of it never stuck with me. Like, I never love it. I never will listen to it on its own. But the lyrical content, like reading the lyrics, then I'm kind of like, oh shit, this is like, okay, I feel you. I feel you, Dave. I know what you're saying.
I think this was this a hurdle too? Was this the one they chose the day after?
It was, yep, because that was a simple, easy one.
Yeah.
It actually hits right when the song hits.
Yeah, and I really like this one. It's not probably one of their deeper songs, not one of their more rocky songs, but I'm a fan of a fun poppy song, and this is kind of it.
This was like before they became what people consider now like an adult rock band. Like, this is almost like as adult rock as it gets. It's kind of like a mellow tune, but the music video too. And like, that's another thing with Foo Fighters. It's always hard to differentiate. Like, this one had Jack Black in it. This is The Airplane. This is Taylor Hawkins looking like a very attractive woman. Let's not kid ourselves. Let's call it what it is. Dave Grohl is the pilot. You know, they drank. It's a hilarious video. The song itself, good song for me, just not one I ever rallied around. So we'll kick off at number 11. Number 10, maybe the most remembered video in some ways. One of the shortest songs, definitely shortest song on this list, Big Me.
It's a current Spotify type song, right? Where it's made short on purpose to get as many listens as possible.
Is that what happens now?
Yeah, that's why they do it. So, like, you can get, because you get paid per stream. You don't get paid per album, you know?
Yeah, but that's so interesting. I didn't even think, like, so bands are now purpose. I knew radio hits, like, migrated to being from, like, when we were young, like, when this song was out of type. This song was, like, half the time of most radio songs, 4.5 minutes usually. Now radio songs are give or take 250 to 315. And that's, like, and they edit that to make it even shorter, like, mostly like, you know,
or they put it at like 102%.
Yes. Oh, that's something. And it's so recognizable to me because I listen to everything in quote unquote real time. And I know you will listen to them. Yeah. But that's like, it's just wild to me that like they do that. And I remember that was a big thing in locally. Magic 106.7 was like notorious. There was a program. It's just wild. But Big Me, just a short, right to the point. I've always loved this song. This song kicks total ass to me.
Girl meets boy. Boy falls in love. Girl tells him to fuck off. It's like the Dave Grohl's explanation of it. And the video is super iconic. They're spoofing the Mentos thing. He does the whole rigmarole with the suit. So it's actually, you know what? It's so like locked into me with the commercials. I can't even remember if that's from this video or the commercial.
That's the best part. And that job well done by them. Also, we've talked about this in our past that we went to the Foozer concert, one of the best concerts I had ever been to, and funny stories that have related outside of that. But this was actually performed. Yeah, Weezer performed this song, not the Foo Fighters at this show, which I don't want to say I was disappointed because I've now seen the Foo Fighters a million times since and have been able to see them perform it. But I was like, I kind of want them to play that. And what song did Foo Fighters do of Weezer's now? I can't remember.
I don't remember either. I think they definitely did one, but I do remember. I've seen Weezer before, and they've done this without them too.
It might have been. It wasn't the Sweater song. It might have been, Buddy Holly. I think it was Buddy Holly. Now that I think about it, because I think I was also disappointed because I'm like, why? I don't want
the two first big hits. They flopped.
Speaking of a song that was one of their first big hits, all Dave Grohl. It is number 9. This is a call. This might be one of the more ridiculous, like, this is, like, early, like, that segue from, like, with the alternative, like, nonsensical lyrics into, like, what became, like, rock music of the 90s. Right in that in between was, like, This Is a Call. And I think this song, again, another song that just hits hard, but, like, so ridiculous. But this is, like, what I also look at a lot of what the Foo Fighters are about. Lyrics are ridiculous. Like, I always just love, what's my favorite part? I just want to make sure I get it right. But the fingernails are pretty. Fingernails are good. It seems like all they ever wanted was a marking. Like, awesome. Like, just nonsense, yeah. But this song kicks. This is also Taylor Hawkins when he first joins the band to be a part of the second album here. And they absolutely just smash. This was the first album as a full band, a full piece set.
And Dave Grohl actually said this is a little bit, it's almost like a little bit like Frank Sinatra. This is him saying thank you and hello to basically everyone he's played with in the past.
Awesome. Awesome background story to it. And this song just, I just think it's awesome. Yeah, because this is a call to all my past resignations. It's been too long. It is. It has been too long. And a lot of time for all of us can relate now. Number eight, I'll Stick Around.
Yeah, this one to me is like when I heard it, I think it was on, there's a Peloton Foo Fighters ride, which is fucking awesome.
Oh, yeah, there was a run. There was a run. All hits, though. I was looking for some deep stuff. But
Even still, I mean, this is all hits. And and they're great workout music. But this, to me, like when I heard it like 2 days ago, I was like, oh, this is like almost about a girl, Nirvana, just a little like turned up the tempo, which is funny because it's basically about Courtney Love being a big B word.
Yeah, because the I don't know you anything.
He said that he denied it for 15 years that the song wasn't about her. And then, you know, it's basically 100% about her.
Which is such a great, going back to your original point, which yes, because he did say like, the thing that I've always liked about Dave Grohl.
It's the rehearsed insanity that he says is like the line that's really cutting towards her.
Ooh, like it. So that's what I like about Dave Grohl. And that's what I think. Like a lot of these like acts of this time, like songs weren't just like, I'm going to write a song about Billy and it's going to be so direct, which we like today, which I think is all stage anyways. But like, it was like the idea of like some pain and then he mixes it into something else. And yes, she's a source of it. Like obviously we'll talk about another song, which everyone thought was about a certain source, but then it's like, well, yeah, he's part of it, but it's also all this. So it's like, they just did a really like Dave's writing and the way that they collaborated and they're writing their songs were like, they came from a source and then they, you know,
yeah, he said he wanted to make sure all of his songs were somewhat open to interpretation. Like they're definitely going to have a hidden meaning. And if you know him and know anything about stuff, you'll be able to read into it a little bit more. But yeah, he always wanted it to be like a little bit open to like, because it's not just for him.
Yeah. And I also want to I'm 90% sure. I know at least in our market and the East Coast side, I'll Stick Around was the very first song released by under the Foo Fighters title. Although it was just Dave Grohl, but this was the first song that actually went out to radio, which in 1995, this song coming on the radio must have been like, holy hell. Like, what? Well, and that's the dude too, from Foo Fighters. I mean, Nirvana.
To think like 1995, like that's fucking crazy. I was like 12.
It was 27 years ago.
Oh, Jesus.
27 years ago. And don't forget, Foo Fighters are a Rock and Roll Hall of Fame band. They have like, you know, they got inducted last year, I believe. Crazy. I hear my son absolutely screaming upstairs. So it's perfect to segue into our number seven song, Breakout, which this out of all the songs. So far, this might be one of the one people will go Breakout. Which one? Like, and you listen to this. This is a perfect, like, you need to ramp up. You're pissed. Like it's all these other songs have it. Oh, this song wails at 1.2. And this is another. This is I was making a list. I haven't finished it yet. It would have been perfect for this. But like Taylor Hawkins' performance album that he won. This the drums, like, because the thing with the Foo Fighters, sometimes it's guitar driven, sometimes it's lyric driven, but the drums are always so prevalent. Obviously, Dave, with his background of being a drummer, him also wanting a band, like he's talked about it, and I can't wait to hear. I'm like, it's gonna suck, but I can't wait to hear his interviews post Taylor Hawkins passing, because he's probably gonna reveal a lot more. But he's always said like he wants every instrument to be equally important. He wants people to know that it's not like they're not trying to hide an instrument, they're not trying to like put something in the secondary. So this song especially with Breakout, he like the drumming in this, there's like two solos in it too, and I don't know. And also just the melody that Dave sings in this song along with the screaming is one of their best overall performances as a band.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like one of these things is not like the other. It's not like most of their typical songs. It feels a little bit different. And listening to a ton of Foo Fighters, I was always like, yeah, I like them. They're okay. Not one of my favorite bands, but you know, after like diving in probably the past like week, a little deeper, they're fucking great. Like they are amazing.
It's
and like here's the thing: you hear every instrument almost equally, and the song composition. Even though it's not as similar as I thought. I think I just hate one of their songs that we're gonna get to soon. Just so much.
Jeez, hate's a very strong word, but I can't take it back. Also, that comes off Nothing Left to Lose. Also, was on the Me, Myself, and Irene soundtrack. Mm-hmm. The Nothing Left to Lose album too was like that last like. The last album they had of the 90s, and was just like a different style album. Like if you listen to it, this also had, don't get me wrong, we already talked about Learn to Fly, has a song Next Year, Generator, Stacked Actors, those will not be on our list, spoiler. But this just didn't have that same feel, but this song, there's something about it that like had that perfect from like crossover from like that late 90s sound into what would be like that early 2000s, like rock sound that we got for the next few years. Not Limp Bizkit style, but you know what I mean? Like this was competing on the radio with a Limp Bizkit, which is kind of weird to think where 1995, which was only 4 years earlier, feels like a lifetime before.
Yeah, it's almost impressive that they've kind of stayed so true, you know, and still make great music.
Yeah, and their evolution is there, and I understand, and you'll start to see where how we don't really have some of their latter albums. We have, I think, one song, but there's reasons for that as well. Coming up, number six, I believe this song you were referencing, which I think maybe the best lyrics they've ever put out. That is Best of You, Bill. Best of You.
I fucking hate this song. It grinds on me. Grinds my gears.
So I don't like Learn to Fly, but I would never say I hate Learn to Fly. But what is it?
It's the repetitiveness. It's the I don't like his voice in this song. I don't like anything about this song. I don't know. It doesn't even like remind me of somebody I hate. It's just like, I think everybody just loved this song. And I was like, fuck this song.
This song gets me. This song is a fist bumper to me. This song rallies all the emotions, Bill. Every single one of them. Happy, sad, melancholy, depressed, everything. This comes off there. I will still say, I think this is the turning point of the Foo Fighters. If we were to get deeper into like a Foo Fighters conversation. In Your Honor was a double album, and I have said this for years. I remember having these conversations with my dad because, like, Springsteen's The River was a double album. A lot of bands did it, but, like, this might be the most unnecessary double album in the history of music. Like, I just don't understand.
I thought you were going to go a different way then.
No, I just don't get double albums in, like, the modern era of time. Like, just release one album, then, like, a year later release another one, in a sense. They have massive hits off this album, by the way. This isn't one of them. I mean, this is one of them. This is a number one hit. I can tell you songs that aren't going to be on the rest of this list. DOA, No Way Back, In Your Honor actually got some radio play. Resolve, we'll talk about this after, but Cold Day in the Sun, which is the only song ever on an album by the Foo Fighters, sung by Taylor Hawkins. But they just, I don't know. And I remember our buddy Kevin. This is like, I feel like when he really got into all were into the Foo Fighters. I remember playing like games or like poker in his garage, listening to this double album. And I remember he used to be like, feel like this album went on forever. And I think that was just I don't like double albums. I like 10.
My favorite album of all time is a double album, but usually they're not good.
Which
Speaker
one?
Speakerbox and Love Below. But that's a different kind of double album.
Fair though, but that's fair. But it is a different one, but that's a great point. I just still like that to me had sense and meaning behind it, where the Foo Fighters just had a ton of songs. So, yeah, we're gonna,
yeah, like, to me, that's like, you know, either split them up, narrow them down, or you know, release something different. It doesn't make sense, especially. I think it's one of those things that maybe they were just like, you know, like the Beatles put out a double album, we're putting out a double album, too,
yeah,
you know,
yeah, no, I get the White Album thing. It could be. It also could be like, let's do it. Like, let's evolve to this. And I'll also give them, here's a little bit of credit to them. They did it at the right time. Because at the end of the day, like a few years after this, putting out a double album would be like, I don't want to say, there's no such thing as career suicide in music anymore. But like, nobody would hear these songs when you're just a stream service away from listening to just the hits. Because that's the thing. Like, after this, Skin and Bones, they put out that live album, and then they came out with a banger of an album, which we'll get to in a few minutes. We'll talk a little bit further, but Best of You in at number six. Number five, and this one, before I tell you what it was, I had such a debate in my brain. Like, do I think this is their best, like, heavier song, Or is this like one of those songs that like I could equally see on the, like somebody saying it's their favorite. I could equally see people saying like it doesn't even need to be on this list. But coming in at number six is Monkey Wrench.
Oh, no way. I mean, it's not one of my favorites, but this song fucking kicks ass. And it's a little bit different. Like I looked up like the meaning behind the lyrics. I never realized what they were about. And it's essentially about realizing you're the problem in the relationship. I thought it was the other way around the whole time. Like, so I don't want to be your monkey wrench.
Because I never knew what a monkey wrench. Because you're the, yeah, it makes, because when you think about the term monkey wrench, like something's like not right. Something's being thrown in that shouldn't be you or the subject of the matter of the song. I just love, it's so funny because it's also like, I think you say it too, like wasting another night on planning my revenge. 1 in 10, 1 in 10, 1 in 10. Like 1 in 10. One in 10. This is on the run, by the way. I think I like peaked. But the 1 in 10 thing, because when you think about it, you're like, what is he talking about? Because it realistically, out of like what you're saying, like he's the problem. Like, so 1 out of 10, he'll probably get right, right? Like, I'll get right one of these times. Which I think is also like a fantastic kind of meaning behind some of their lyrical content as well. But it also has one of the maybe like I've never been in a true, well, a good mosh pit. I don't know if there is a good one. Two I remember is one in Lynn when our buddy Pachi got a bloody nose, had to take him to the hospital. With a friend's band at the time. What was the name of their band? Why can't I remember now?
It was Above Nothing, and then they had
Last Run at the time, Above Nothing, one of the greatest, one of the best Bill Burns of all time. So you're below everything. So then he got a bloody nose there. And then I believe the concert we saw in Worcester, we weren't in a true mosh pit, but like the area around us, everybody started to do the pushing, shoving stuff. And I just remember, also Pachi was there for that. But I just remember when this song breaks down, right before the one last day before I go, and he just like simmers the whole crowd and everybody, like you could feel the intensity of the audience. And anytime you see this song live, you can watch their, where's the famous place? All of a sudden, I can't remember, in London that they played. What's the big stadium there?
Lord that Alfred one. Hall. I don't know.
No.
Like the Wembley.
Wembley Stadium. Thank you, Bill. Look at that. Right off the brain. If we only could have remembered Street Profits 5 years ago. So they, play that show, like his concert footage, you can look on YouTube, like the way he like he'll walk out that long extended stage and you feel the tension build and build and build, and then he does a cappella version of that one last thing before, and so everyone's kind of like, okay, like I want to kind of jump around and go wild. Then as soon as the next part of the song hits, I swear I don't think there's a body that could stay still. I don't, that would make a man rise from a whale chair. Like we're talking, this it's one of the best live performance songs because everybody's like waiting for it.
Yeah, and it's a pretty good start too. Like it's the like it kind of keeps that pacing the whole time, but still rocks really hard. It's a very pop but hard rock song.
Shout out to former TV Guy Productions theme song right there. Never got pulled off of YouTube because it's under 7 seconds. So Monkey Wrench at number 5. And here's where I think when we get to our top 4, we'll talk honorable mentions, our Mount Rushmore, if you will. No one's done that before, right, Bill? Anyone done Mount Rushmore?
No, especially Mount Rushmores of Mount Rushmores.
Nope. Fresh ideas. We should do one. So when it comes to these 4 songs, you could probably blender them up in some way for some people.
I think it's a clear-cut number 1 for them.
I think so, too, but I could see people bouncing all these around, or some people being like, what the hell is this or that one doing on there? But that's people's opinion. That's why we love it. And feel free to share them with us at Pop Culture PD. Leave this podcast a 5-star review, Pop Culture Pile Driver, on the iTunes. So you can also tell Alexa to listen to us. And if you have us on a speaker, Alexa, play death metal music. Okay. Number 4, by the way, I do that sometimes. I think the Alexa devices are great in a lot of ways, but the crap you can pull with them is hilarious.
Like just also, being like, they don't, when I set the alarm in the morning and I say Alexa off, when it starts beeping, it always goes off and then goes back on one more time. And then my second time telling Alexa to turn it off is very nasty.
Well, I'll tell you this, Bill. She knows.
She does know, because I probably would fall back asleep a lot of the time.
Yeah. This morning, I didn't have Alexa on, but I had a weird night's sleep. And I was up from like 3 to like probably close to 5. You have to stop looking at the clock when you can mess with your brain. And I woke up. It was like 6:55. And I was like, oh, okay, good. I'm just going to get up now. And but it's funny because my wife, on the other hand, would be the person like what you mentioned. Like she'll like I'll hear her alarm going off like six times. I'm like, what are we doing here? Like, what are you doing? But Alexa knows. Alexa's smart. Coming in at number four, My Hero by the Foo Fighters.
Great use in a lot of movies, too. Probably my favorite is The Other Guys when The Rock and Samuel L. Jackson jump off the building.
Now you give me more reason to watch that movie.
Oh, you've never seen it?
No, I think we brought this up with Mac and Drew once. And it wasn't like they were just making fun of me kind of thing. They were literally like, no, you should literally watch that movie.
Yeah,
like, you
never had a desktop?
I don't know any of this stuff. Obviously, this is our second of three off of The Color and the Shape, their 1997 album. Monkey Wrench we spoke about, and yeah, My Hero. Again, the song, as soon as you heard it, as soon as it became a hit, everybody's like, oh, it's about Kurt Cobain. Oh, it's about Kurt Cobain. It's about Kurt Cobain. It's about Kurt Cobain. And then Dave, originally in the very famous Stern interview where he plays a song acoustic, which we'll talk about, he said, it's about the everyday man. It's just about like the everyday guys. They even said, and this is another thing that's interesting, Bill. Back then, at least, I don't know now, but they used to help, not direct, but like creative about music. So like what you do for a living. Mm-hmm. Imagine your talent. So recently, Bill, you made an excellent video for the arrival of Jared Carabas at Barstool Sports. I'm sorry, from Barstool Sports to DraftKings. Mm-hmm. And he probably had some form of like, here's what I kind of like in it video. Mm-hmm. Or did you guys create it completely on your own?
We just kind of did an interview and, you know, shot him around Fenway and just kind of stapled it together.
But like, did he have any, like, did he say, oh, Fenway would be cool, or did he have any say in any of it?
Like, I won't get into the minutiae of shoot planning, but it was very like, oh crap, we got to do something, and we just went out and did something.
Okay. That's fine, but the point where I was going and with this video, because they purposely said I wanted to just show a dude saving people. Like, dude, yes, it is. Gianna, yes, it is. A dude saving people. That's what the whole thing. He's like, I don't want it to look like certain. If you even know in the music video, the person who's saving everybody has a blurred out face. Mm-hmm. And Dave said, like, that's what they wanted. So, like, there was a Billy who was creating the video, coming up with the concepts with the team, shooting and all that. But they were like, this is the important stuff for us.
Yeah.
And so if you watch this music video, it's looks like a SoCal apartment complex, kind of like, is on fire, and the guy keeps going in and out, grabbing cats, dogs, people, objects. And then at the end of it, all the firefighters show up and he's just kind of left there. Like, no one's putting much credit to him. So anyways, that's what the song is about, though. To him, he said it's about the everyday people that are doing things that are amazing every day, that are heroes that never get their due. But years later, that's when it all started. But then years later, he's like, of course Kurt was in my mind. Of course, because he was the line where he says he's ordinary. It's like, Kurt was one of the most ordinary people when you're just in a room. Now, he was extraordinary, smart. His thought process was much different than most people. But he said that was like lyrics came to mind while writing the song about the everyday hero, about Kurt Cobain. It makes it a little bit deeper, makes it a little more special. And the song is just so amazing, so emotional, so beautifully put together.
Yeah. And it's a weird type of song where it's a little bit slow, but it rocks like crazy. They've had a couple of politicians try to use their songs. I believe John McCain tried to use the song.
Yes.
They were like, nope, sorry. And I think George Bush tried to use the song too for his reelection, and they told him to fuck off.
Yeah, it was the 2008 presidential campaign. I think that would have been, was that McCain? Is that who Obama won against? Or was that, McCain? Yes, John McCain. Right. Because I forgot if that was Mitt Romney. I just don't remember everything. But yeah, I know the other one. The band did play it, I know, once at a Democratic National Convention or something. Because I remember they're not like – oh, he tries not to be overly political, but, you know, he will also – there's celebrities also never can not be in some ways. But the other thing about this song, we talked about billboards and all that. This reached only number six on the alternative charts. And that shows you how goddamn competitive those alternative charts were in the late 90s.
Yeah, because this is like, I would have figured this easy was a one.
This would have been a number one hit like 10 years later when like charts were very different. And, because this was also, if you remember, it was mostly radio play and then, album or single sales. And yes, there was singles of this because I had one. I had a cassette single of My Hero. I got it like a middle school dance. It was awesome. But yeah, My Hero coming in at number four. Number three, Bill. the probably last most current song coming off of Echoes, Silence, Patience, and Grace, the album that got them a Grammy Award. It is the first single off of that. It came out in 2007. It was a number 37. How crazy is this? Number 37 on the Billboard Hot 100, the highest since Learn to Fly and Best of You. It was also a number one hit for the most successful song of the Foo Fighters. It is The Pretender.
I love this song. It starts off a little slow. You're not expecting what comes from it, but it absolutely just rocks your face off. And it was somewhat inspired by Sesame Street. Well, one of these things is not like the other.
it has the lyrical content of Sesame Street with the background of politics at the time. This is also, you have to remember, 2007, 2006. Like, this is that in America. We're not getting into it because I don't think either one of us really care to go here. But this was just what the song. It was all about like political unrest, and he basically said he never wants to give away any specifics. This is a quote. He says, but it's nice for people to have their own idea of interpretation of the song. But no, everyone's been effed over before. And I think a lot of people feel effed over right now in the country. And they're not going to get away with what they promised us that we never received. That's kind of, and he's basically calling people pretenders. I have to find out. So believe this song, I know it was for over 17 weeks, the number one song in the alternative charts. Muse's Uprising may have beat it. But this is like, those two are the most successful songs in the history of the alt charts since it was, started in the 90s.
I mean, this song kicks goddamn ass. This was when it came on the Peloton, like you don't even, your legs just go.
A heart rate just blasting. But let's put a couple of honorable mentions. I know we mentioned a bunch earlier. Anything we haven't gotten to that are not in our top two that you would like to mention?
Cloud Spotter.
Ooh, deep cuts. Like it.
That's pretty much the only one that I have, I think, that you didn't have. Something for Nothing.
Yeah, see, Something for Nothing I have on here, too. That was really close. No, but no, that doesn't matter. This is our... So, like, All My Life, Walk, Rope, Walking After You, Next Year, Cold Day in the Sun, which, again, was the only Taylor Hawkins song. He has many bands, by the way, that you can listen to him sing. Hey Johnny Park, which is like, to me, like amazing. We talked a little bit about Generator. All of a sudden I can't remember one other one that had a crazy music video. But yeah, those are some of the ones that come to mind. Year for the Cows too. Like they have some just really like, their albums are very listen toable if you like Foo Fighters. Like they don't go far off. Like, some bands have like the singles that are like, oh wow, I gotta hear all of this. And then you listen to the rest of the album, you're kind of like, meh. Like Sugar Ray, their first album, you're like, Learn to Fly, I gotta hear more of this. And it was like a borderline hard rock album. You're like, what are we doing here? What is this shit? And then they're like, okay, we're gonna go poppy, and Mark McGrath is cashed in on that. But Foo Fighters, you know what you're getting, especially the early Foo Fighters stuff. Pretty hard rock, couple of like slower tracks, but just, I think, kick-ass rock and roll.
I mean, I've kind of always had that as like their negative, is the fact that they kind of don't change too much. But it's almost a strength, the fact that they've been able to do it so well for so long. And like I said, listening to them more and more, one of the things is not like the other. They're not as similar as I thought. I just hate The Best of You. I think it was his hair and look at the time, too. He had like a really shorter cut. Yeah, and it was like all matted down. I hated it. Hated it.
All right, coming in at number two, personally for me, this might, I think this is my favorite Foo Fighter song. It's these next two songs literally are like time away from each other, kind of similar in a lot of ways. It is off of the One by One album. It is, Low was the other album I was thinking, song I was thinking of off of this album. I love this album. It is Times Like These, another one of those super emotional, but yet also kick-ass rocking songs, because the breakdown of this and the way this song ends just ends on an absolute banger. But Times Like These, just, I think, again, one of the ever relatable songs, no matter where you've been in life, happy, sad, in between. This is a song that's just that, like, there's light at the end of the tunnel. You know, once you kind of reach that light at the end of the tunnel, you realize whatever just happened, good, bad, or in between, is done. You learn to kind of just move forward. And it's not something you're going to, you'll look back on, but it's not going to be that thing that kind of like keeps your mentality in that place. Absolute smash.
Yeah, to me, this one, it's not I don't love it as much as you do. This would be a little bit outside of probably my Mount Rushmore of their songs, but it definitely is like an all-time classic rock song. This, like, you could play this for, you know, your grandfather or your uncle who's like, I hate these kids today and probably doesn't know the Foo Fighters, but they would enjoy the song and be like, oh, who is this?
Yeah, and again, can play it acoustic, can play it hard, rock it. Everything about it is so well done. And again, Taylor Hawkins' drums in this one, so prevalent with throughout the song. It's kind of like the bass line of it. And that's another thing. The Foo Fighters have this way of using their drumming and for a lot of their, like, the way their songs are constructed as what most bands use is their bass, right? Like, if you listen, not all songs, but a majority, you will notice, you're like, wow, the drums kind of lead us where we're going here, not a, you know, a bass, which is fascinating to me. Also, talk about a chart-topping song. This was a Billboard Mainstream Rock number 5, Alternative Airplay. That was the thing back in 2003. Number 5, number 1 in U.S. Rock. Billboard Hot 100 peaked at 65. 12 for U.K., Scotland at 12. The Netherlands, Bill, at 90. Ireland at 27, which probably was like 4 years later. And Australia came in at 22. This was the song I think you were referencing earlier, by the way, where George Bush used this in his re-election in 2004. And Dave Grohl just said, well, that's kind of weird. And he goes, and to me, it just seems like a pretty good example of how completely out of touch he was. All right. Well,
Is it one of those things where it's almost like the Nirvana song? So he's the one who likes all our pretty songs.
Yeah.
You know, but he don't know what it means.
Also, this was in Rock Band. I remember playing this quite a lot. The only things I can remember it being in movie-wise was American Wedding, which is an underrated soundtrack, and was also part of WWE, one of their, like, when they went to, you know, Afghanistan, and they had those, like, video packages, which are always well done. It's WWE. But times like these, again, are number 2 Foo Fighters song. So, Bill, to quickly recap, Learn to Fly at 11, Big Me, This Is a Call, I'll Stick Around, Breakout, Best of You, Monkey Wrench, My Hero, The Pretender, Times Like These, our number 1 song, With a Bullet, Everlong.
Yeah, and I think this is probably widely ranged as their best song. It's good acoustic. I like the more rocky version of it. You know, they have the Howard Stern one that you referenced a few times. But to me, it doesn't get much better than this. I think Mac and Davey have both says it's probably a perfect song.
It's really close, because there's another thing. There's no many different, like, innuendo meanings in a sense to it. At the end of the day, it's a love song. It's a love song to somebody. It could be a friend. It could be, you know, he talked about this even recently, like, obviously time goes by, but this was about one of the girls in Farouk Assault at the time, because they were in a relationship. Go listen to some Farouk Assault today and just question life. But Dave, basically, as we talked about that Howard Stern thing, that's where the famous video of him playing this song and Taylor Hawkins sitting there, probably stoned out of his mind, in a fetal position, not in a fetal position, but like he's just like cuddled in and just staring at Dave like in awe. And it is just such an awesome video. It's such, you can tell their relationship, that brother relationship. But this song, like you said, acoustic, maybe one of the best acoustic songs, like, to just as is. And then
to your point about how, like, he tries to feature all of the instruments in it so well. Like, this is, I think that's why you like it so much. When you hear them all kind of come together for the first time in the song, they're all equally important and they're all equally, like, they just, it's a perfect, what do they call it?
Like symphony?
Euphony. Yeah, symphony of sound. It's amazing.
It is. Lyrical content-wise, the beauty of it, it can be wedding songs, even though it doesn't really have that. It has the vibe of it, but it's not really like a lot, like completely. But it is. It's about, you know, trying to make sure that everyone kind of is like on the same page. And I think this song is amazing. It's, like I said, it's kind of the chalk pick, but sometimes the chalk pick is it for a reason. There's no Cinderellas in real life all the time, Bill. Not everyone has the glass slipper. But I think this is the perfect list. I think we put it together. We did it again. We crushed it. We're going to come back, because this last week, so Dave Grohl sat a week. During this week was the anniversary of the passing of Kurt Cobain. Mm. Now Taylor Hawkins, I believe, was, I think they had their ceremonies this week as well. So we'll come back next week with the top 11 Nirvana songs. So again, we'll put out this list. We'll tweet it
probably
out.
Probably a chalk one there too, but We'll see.
We'll find out. We'll find out next week. Stay tuned. He is at Bully D, just across all platforms. He's just a bully. He just beats you up over the head. But he's a lovable guy. Guy's such a big teddy bear with a big heart. Give it to you. Is. Use a softie. Don't even pretend. We all have our problems, and some of us shine them higher than the others. But he is at Billy Yee 2411 on Twitter. Follow the man at Billy D 2411 over on Instagram. He's the heart and soul of what he does, where he does, when he does, what he does. And I am at Jason D. Rossi. We are at Pop Culture PD. Let us know your feedback on this list. We will catch you all real soon. Be well, be loved. Bill, any final words for our fine folks?
Slap it on the biscuit.
Frank says hi.